The story of Jesus seemed to come to a quick and cruel end last week. Jesus was arrested, he was tried as a criminal, and then killed on a Roman execution stake. The story ended way too soon for his followers. His life was cut too short. It wasn't how it was supposed to go. It's not what people expected. I know many were thinking, what in the world is going on here? Those who had left everything to follow after him, those who had made so many sacrifices to be a part of his ministry, and then it was over. It ended so soon, so quick, so cruelly. The apostles were particularly confused. They had given up more than others. They had left homes, they had left families or jobs to follow this man. They gave him everything they had, at least they thought they had. They didn't make all those sacrifices for it to end this way. You think about when we invest in something, if we invest in somebody, we invest our time, we invest our energy, we invest our life, we often have expectations. And the apostles had expectations, and this is not what they expected. All of the miracles, all of the teachings, all of the things that Jesus did, they did not expect it to end with his death on the cross. And I'm sure they had a lot of thoughts racing through their minds as Jesus was crucified. What now? What do we do now? For 3 years they had followed after this man. For 3 years their life revolved around him. What do we do now? I've always found life to be a little strange. After a week at camp, you're at church camp for a week, you're in this isolated environment, your life is on a very structured pattern, just getting into the car and listening to the radio for the first time, everything is just a little strange. That's after 1 week. The apostles had been with Jesus for 3 years. Imagine how strange life was for them after Jesus' death. They had traveled with this guy for 3 years. What do they do now? Do they go back to their former life? Do they return to their old jobs? Do they just live life as if all this time meant nothing? The death of Jesus and his burial was confusing for a lot of people. The apostles were confused. They were perplexed. We could probably say they were deflated, as were many other people. Luke tells the story of two of Jesus' disciples heading home after his death. They're walking from Jerusalem, the place where all of these things had happened, where Jesus was tried in a horrible way, where he was persecuted and then killed. They're traveling from that location, from Jerusalem, to Emmaus, the village that they had left to follow him. In this story, it paints a scene. It gives us a picture that was common for most, if not all, of Jesus' followers at this time. Let's pick up in Luke 24, verse 13. And behold, two of them were going that very day to a village named Emmaus, which was about 7 miles from Jerusalem. And they were talking with each other about all these things which had taken place. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself approached and began traveling with them. Two followers of Jesus, two disciples who had learned from him, who had watched him and listened to him, two who knew about the horrible events that had taken place in Jerusalem. And now they're going back to Emmaus, devastated, heartbroken, wondering what had just happened. And these two disciples were having a conversation. They were talking with each other about all the things that had taken place in Jerusalem. What things were they talking about? Well, maybe they were reminiscing about all the great moments they had encountered with Jesus. Perhaps they were talking about Jesus healing people, things that they may have witnessed themselves. These two disciples were talking with each other about all that had taken place. Maybe they recounted that day when Jesus raised Lazarus back to life, not realizing a more important resurrection had just taken place more recently. Perhaps they recounted the day when Jesus entered Jerusalem in such a victorious manner, when all of the people were praising him, "Hosanna, son of David." I don't know if they talked about any of those things. I don't know if they reflected on any of those specific moments. But I do know that they talked about his death. I know they talked about everything that had taken place in Jerusalem, all of those horrible events that all of the people witnessed with their eyes. There's not a doubt in my mind that they talked about the humiliation that he endured, being mocked, his being spat upon, being scourged, having a crown of thorns crushed into his skull. I know they recounted Jesus carrying the beam of lumber to the place of his execution. They walk home talking about all of these things, probably feeling a sense of embarrassment themselves. Can you imagine returning home after having made an error in judgment that big? Dropping everything to follow a man because you thought that he was something that he apparently wasn't? How do these two disciples feel in this moment? If you were going to describe their emotions as they're traveling from Jerusalem to Emmaus, as they're recounting all of these things that had taken place in Jerusalem, how would you describe what they were feeling? Well, I think they felt cheated, abandoned. They probably felt a little foolish. And it's these two disciples that show us what was going on in the lives of many of Jesus' disciples at this time. Many of those first century disciples probably had these same feelings. They probably felt cheated. They probably felt abandoned. They probably felt foolish for sacrificing so much, for giving so much, for having so much hope in this man that was just killed on a Roman execution stake. We are introduced to two disciples probably going back to resume their former life. And then Jesus comes on the scene. Pick up with me in verse 17. Jesus says to them, "What are these words that you are exchanging with one another as you are walking?" And they stood still, looking sad. One of them, named Cleopas, answered and said to him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem and unaware of the things which have happened here in these days?" You know, these two disciples, they're talking about everything that everybody knew. This was the news in this area. Everybody in Jerusalem knew what had happened. And here comes this guy. They don't know who he is. And this guy is asking them, "What are you talking about? What's going on?" And they're just blown away. "Don't you know what has happened? Don't you understand what just took place in Jerusalem just a few short miles from here?" And their emotional place is described for us. They were sad. They were devastated. And he said to them, "What things?" And they said to him, "The things about Jesus the Nazarene, who was a prophet mighty in deed and word in the sight of God and all the people, and how the chief priests and our rulers delivered him to the sentence of death and crucified him." "Haven't you heard about this guy? Haven't you heard about Jesus? Haven't you heard about all of the things that he did? Haven't you heard what happened to him just over there in Jerusalem?" These two disciples, of course, don't realize that this is Jesus. Of course he knew what happened. He lived it. He went through it. He was the one on the cross. He was the one who gave his life. He was the one who performed all of these mighty deeds. Of course he knew what happened. They didn't understand what was happening. They're shocked that someone could be that out of it. How can you be in this area and not know what has just taken place? And they explain that they thought Jesus was the one the prophets had promised. The one that Isaiah had wrote about, he was here, at least we thought he was. The one that Jeremiah talked about, we thought he was here. The one that was prophesied concerning all of the things he would do, we thought he was right here in our midst. The one spoken of, who would lead us out of exile, who would lead us in this new exodus, we thought the guy was here. But they were mistaken. Because this Jesus was recently sentenced to death and then crucified. And every Jew, now listen, every Jew here in the first century understood that anyone who was crucified was cursed by God. Jesus wasn't who they thought he was. There's no way he was the Messiah. There's no way he was the anointed one. There's no way he's going to be king. There's no way he's in the line of David. There's no way he's going to lead us against Rome. He was crucified on a Roman execution stake. And everybody who hangs on a cross, everybody who hangs on a tree is cursed by God. Those were words from Moses. Their thoughts then next move towards the resurrection here in verse 21. It reveals what they were hoping for. As they talked to this mystery traveler, they revealed their hopes. We were hoping that it was he who was going to redeem Israel. That's what we expected. We gave up so many things. We followed after this guy. We had our lives revolve around him. But we had some expectations. We expected him. We were hoping that he was going to redeem us. That he was going to take us back to where we were. Back to the days when Solomon reigned and we were the mighty empire. That's what we were expecting. Indeed, besides all this, it is the third day since these things happened. On the third day, Jesus was supposed to rise. No news of that. No word of that. I guess it was just all a hoax. But also some women among us amazed us when they were at the tomb early in the morning and did not find his body. They came saying that they had also seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just exactly as the women also had said, but him they did not see. They didn't believe in the resurrection at this time. These two travelers, they're weary, they're heartbroken, they're sad. They had heard words concerning the resurrection. They knew that on the third day something miraculous was supposed to happen, something grand, something amazing was supposed to take place. But all they remember is seeing Jesus up there on the cross. All they remember is that he died in a horrible, cruel way. And so for these two disciples, in their minds, the death of Jesus was the end of Jesus. The death of Jesus was the end of hope. The death of Jesus, that was the end of the story. They were hoping, but their hopes had been crushed. They had left homes to follow him, but now they consider it a waste of time. As far as they're concerned, this whole thing is turning into an odd ending to a heartbreaking life. And all of their despair comes from their hope, their expectation that it was this guy, it was this Jesus who was going to redeem Israel. And it's not hard to see why they thought this. He follows the predictions of the prophets down to the last word. He embraces the term Son of David. He openly acknowledges that he knows exactly what he's doing. He heals people in public. He debates the religious leaders on the finest points of what this coming leader will do and who he will be. And he never stops talking about being a servant. And then he's gone. Can we even fathom, can we even try to understand what it was like for his disciples? What it was like for his followers who had experienced everything with Christ? Think about the 12, all that they had encountered with him, all that they had been through, the ups, the downs, the miracles, the teachings. And then just one day, in a few short hours, it all ends. It's all over. He's crucified and buried in a tomb. How will this mystery traveler, how will Jesus, who these two disciples don't even recognize, how will he respond to all of this? Well, let's pick up in verse 25. He said to them, "O foolish men, and slow of heart to believe in all that the prophets have spoken. Was it not necessary for the Christ to suffer these things and to enter into his glory?" Then, beginning with Moses and with all the prophets, he explained to them the things concerning himself and all the scriptures. Have you ever noticed in scripture Have you ever noticed as you examine the life of Christ, he often doesn't say what we would expect him to say? Have you ever been around somebody who finishes your sentences for you? You're trying to make a point, you're trying to talk, and that person just interrupts you and finishes your statement, finishes your sentence for you? Are we guilty of doing that with Jesus? Do we anticipate what we think he will say instead of actually letting him speak? Do we try to just throw our own thoughts in there and just add words to it and say, "Hey, Jesus, I know what you're going to say. I know how you're going to respond in this situation." Look at this story right here. We have two travelers who are sad, two followers of Jesus who have seemingly lost everything. They've lost all hope. They're despondent. They're in despair. We know what Jesus is going to say. Jesus is going to wrap his arms around them. He's going to hug them. He's going to embrace them. And he's going to comfort them and encourage them. We know exactly what Jesus is going to say. We don't even have to read on. That's not what he does. He calls them foolish. "You're foolish for thinking this." Here are these two disciples. They thought this traveler was foolish. They thought he was the one ignorant. "Do you not know what's happened? Do you not know what's taking place here in Jerusalem?" But they are the ones who are actually ignorant. Foolish. "How foolish you are," Jesus says to them. He doesn't empathize with them in their pain. He doesn't say he understands how difficult all this must be for them to have left all that they had left and now to be hopeless. That's not what he says. He thinks they're being foolish. And then next, he calls them slow. "You're foolish and you're slow." That's probably not what we would expect Jesus to say. But their plans for Jesus had a wrench thrown into them by his death. And here Jesus, he's frustrated that they haven't believed what the prophets actually spoke about him. They didn't know that he did everything that was prophesied concerning his life. For these disciples, Jesus' death is the end of hope. For this mystery traveler, for Jesus himself, his death isn't the end of hope. It's actually the beginning of hope. Because without that event, without those events in Jerusalem, without his death on the cross, then there would be no hope. This man next explains why Jesus had to suffer. This mystery traveler begins with Moses and continues through the prophets, teaching them about Jesus. Keep in mind this whole time, this is kind of mind-blowing for us, this whole time that this conversation is going on, these two disciples, they don't know this is Jesus with them. They're making this trip, they're traveling from Jerusalem to Emmaus. They're in despair, they're sad, they're heartbroken. They don't even realize that Jesus is right there, walking with them. That it's Jesus, the resurrected Jesus, who's going to be teaching them about the prophets. For this mystery traveler, everything about the cross, everything about the crucifixion and the death of Jesus can be explained in the Old Testament. Have you ever wondered what he said to them? Have you ever wondered what message Jesus shared with these two disciples? There's times I look at Scripture and I think, man, I wish I could have been there. I wish I could have heard that sermon. I wish I could have heard this full lesson. It had to be an amazing teaching. How did he explain Jesus' death as redemptive and not futile? Did the stranger teach them about doing justice and righteousness? Did he talk to them about the mistakes of David's other son, Solomon? Did the stranger teach them about violence? Now that's certainly an interesting thought. What we see just in the first several chapters of Genesis. Now think about the book of Genesis. The first several chapters of the book of Genesis reveal what we see throughout human history. From Cain on, we've seen how violence escalates until all of civilization is in trouble. Did Jesus talk to them about violence? The human propensity for violence has been with us from the beginning. If he will take some form of violence, then more violence isn't going to solve anything. We can't forget that Jesus is doing something new. He will actually do justice and righteousness. That's how he lived. On the night when Jesus was betrayed by a group of soldiers, he was betrayed by Judas, and here come the soldiers with swords and clubs to arrest him. That, of course, is absurd. But this is how it is with those addicted to the myth of violence. They come with swords and clubs because it's the only language they know how to speak. And Jesus' disciples are outraged, and one of them takes a sword, and he starts swinging that sword. And I don't imagine Peter was aiming for Malchus's ear. Jesus tells him to put away his sword, for all who will draw the sword will die by the sword. And of course, we've seen enough of that in human history. We know that story all too well, even here in modern day. And then Jesus reminds Peter that through his Father he could do what he wanted, that he could be victorious in this situation. It's as if Jesus says, if I do everything like everybody has done since the beginning of time, how would that change anything? Jesus was bringing something different, something new, something that didn't exist. The only way to break that cycle is for somebody to absorb it. A true leader of a new Exodus would have to resist using violence. And Isaiah the prophet called the one to come a suffering servant. So maybe Jesus talked to them about violence. And as we travel back here to Luke 24, is this how the stranger interpreted Jesus' death? As the ultimate cost of the suffering servant? That he was willing to pay the ultimate price to bring something new? Maybe this is what the stranger shared as he began with Moses and continued through the prophets. That the suffering servant came to earth to die, not to swing a sword. Or maybe this mystery traveler taught them about exile. This is certainly something they knew from their history. We have journeyed through the pages of God's book by following the Israelites. Much of our journey has been spent with the nation in exile. Maybe this traveler teaches not just about Jewish exile, but human exile. So if all of creation is in some sort of exile, estranged from its maker, far from home, what's the penalty for that? What would be the payment to end that exile? Well, the prophets declared that someone would come who would be willing to pay the price. The price for all of creation, breaking covenant with God, the price for sin. And if that price was paid, then that would change everything. Everything and everybody could then come home. Did this stranger explain to them that the recent public execution was that price? That the death they knew about wasn't the end, but rather a beginning? Maybe he talked to them about violence. Maybe he talked to them about exile. Or perhaps this mystery traveler talked to them about Adam. What has been needed from the start is another Adam. Not an Adam who would give in to temptation, but one who would crush the serpent. The serpent crusher's victory would have to happen in a specific way. The only way it would actually change things would be if the serpent crusher survived death. To experience the worst a human can suffer and then come out the other side alive. Maybe that's what he taught them. Violence, exile, payment. What were these two disciples taught? Were they taught about the suffering servant? Were they taught about exile? Were they taught about Adam? Whatever the stranger on this road taught these disciples from Moses and the prophets, whatever message he shared, whatever news he gave them concerning the prophets, concerning Moses, whatever he said to them, they got it. Their eyes were opened. And they approached the village where they were going. They were going to Emmaus. And he acted as though he were going further. But they urged him, saying, "Stay with us, for it is getting toward evening, and the day is now nearly over." So he went in to stay with them. When he had reclined at the table with them, he took the bread and blessed it, and breaking it, he began giving it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. Finally, all of the events made sense. Their eyes were opened. The suffering, the death, the crucifixion of Jesus, it made sense to them. Using nothing but the Old Testament, this man converted all of their despair to hope, a new vision of a new future. In Jesus' day, way back here when Jesus was alive, here in the first century, people could read about Jesus, they could study about him, they could discuss scriptures their entire lives, and still miss its central message. In Jesus' day, people could follow him, learn from him, drop everything to be his disciples, and yet find themselves returning home thinking Jesus had failed. Which is a bit like walking with someone for hours, only to discover that you had missed who they really are the whole time. Because this mystery traveler is, of course, Jesus himself. What a moment this must have been when these two disciples finally realized that that one who was killed on the cross, that one who suffered horribly physically, the one who gave his life at Calvary, when they finally realized, here he is, alive, resurrected, back to life. I promise you they weren't sad anymore. I promise you they weren't hopeless anymore. I promise you they weren't filled with despair anymore. There's a lot of people who are living sad lives today. A lot of people who are living lives of despair. A lot of people who are living life as if there's no hope. Jesus is alive. Be happy. Be excited. You don't have to be sad. You don't have to live a life of despair. You don't have to be despondent. And you don't have to stay in your sin. Because our Savior, he's resurrected. Maybe it's time for us to finally understand who this Jesus is, who he can be for us. This morning, if you need to be baptized into Christ, this morning, if you need the prayers of your church family, all things are available to you through this mystery traveler, through this Jesus Christ who gave his life at Calvary. If you have a need, we invite you to come as we stand and sing together.